This is Mr. Seiker. Good morning to you, and Ms. Tangeman, good morning to you. Do either of you have any questions before we begin?
No, Your Honor.
And Mr. Seiker, we're having people coming in and out of the courtroom, so let's give them a moment to get in. And again, I believe many of the folks who just entered the courtroom are from a constitutional law class at UNL, so we welcome you here today. With that, Mr. Seiker, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Alex Seiker. I'm an assistant public defender in Douglas County. I represent Ms. Julina Reznicek, who's the appellant in this case before the court today. Ms. Reznicek assigned two assignments of error in this case. The first is what appears to be based on the district court's ruling on our appeal from county court to be an issue of first impression before the court, before this court. The question is whether an out-of-court hearsay statement from one witness who testified in the trial to another falls under the present sense impression exception to the hearsay rule in 27803.
Counsel, what exactly is the statement that we should be focused on? Give me the words of the statement that you're claiming was hearsay.
That's the difficulty with the record in this case. I think overall the record was pretty sparse in terms of, in the record it's called a communication. So just to back up, what happens is Ms. Reznicek is, my client is shopping at Von Maur. She enters the dressing room with nine pairs of athletic shorts. A loss prevention officer is watching her over a video camera, sees her leaves with half of those, leave the dressing room with half of those shorts, and then another loss prevention officer at Von Maur enters the dressing room, supposedly to check on whether shorts were left behind. The testimony from the loss prevention officer who went into the dressing room was essentially that she didn't remember this incident. She didn't remember whether there were shorts left behind. She basically testified as to what their standard procedures were in a situation like this. And then the loss prevention officer who was following Ms. Reznicek via camera, who did not view the inside of the dressing room, said he received a communication from Ms. Crum, who is the loss prevention officer in the dressing room, and the only statement was that there were no shorts found in the dressing room, but there wasn't an exact statement in the record, per se, as to what was relayed from Ms. Crum to Mr. Teets, who's the other loss prevention officer.
So do we have a hearsay statement?
I think we do.
What is it?
That there were no shorts left behind in the dressing room. Mr. Teets says that in the record. So I think that's the statement that we have, and that's what he relies on to attempt to stop Ms. Reznicek from leaving the store.
You're saying we should interpret the record as saying that Mr. Teets is saying the other person said there were no shorts in the
dressing room. Yes, he says there was a communication from her to him, and that there, when asked by the state, were there any shorts in the dressing room, based on that communication, he says there were no shorts in the dressing room.
Could that have been admitted not for the truth of the matter asserted, but for its effect on the hearer? Assuming it is characterized as you characterize it.
I think it is for the truth of the matter asserted that there were no shorts in the dressing room. I think
could it have been offered not for the truth of the matter asserted, but for its effect on Mr. Teets?
I don't believe so. I think the statement was, I think it was offered for the truth of the matter asserted, and that's really the crux of the state's argument. The second assignment of error was...
Before you go on, didn't Mr. Teets testify that if he'd been told that there were shorts in there, he would not have gone out into the parking lot to pursue your client? And if so, if that's in the record, does that go to the effect on the listener?
I I'm sorry, I can't remember if he, I know Ms. Crum testified something to that effect. I'm not remembering if he testified to that as well, but I believe it does go to the truth of matter, sir, that he says that, or that she said there was no shorts in the dressing room, and that's how the state was offering this evidence and why Mr. Teets was recalled to offer that evidence.
As distinguished from, here's what I remember, here's what I understood, here's how I heard it.
Yes.
Is there also circumstantial evidence that there were no shorts in the dressing room? Do we have the surveillance video that shows the employee going in and looking and then coming out? And if so, what does that tell us?
There was surveillance video offered. You can't see into the dressing room. You do see the employee go, you do see Ms. Resnicek exit, the employee go into the dressing room, and then...
Does she carry any shorts out? Does she carry anything out?
The camera, if I remember, the camera switches then to follow Ms. Resnicek throughout the store where she's going. So you don't really see what happens after the employee exits the dressing room. There's a brief moment where you see her later standing at the checkout counter, the employee that is, Ms. Crum. At that time, you don't see any shorts in her hand, but if I remember correctly, you don't see her actually, Ms. Crum actually exit the dressing room because the camera then follows Ms. Resnicek throughout the store as she puts the other shorts she has in her hand back on the rack. So as to the present sense impression issue, again, the...
Why would this not be a present sense impression if indeed there was a statement?
So the statute says that a statement describing or explaining an event or condition made while or immediately after the declarant perceived that event or condition. In the record, there's no testimony that when this statement or communication, as it's called in the record, was made, that there's no, Ms. Crum doesn't remember making the statement. Essentially, her testimony was, this is what we typically do in this situation.
Did she remember that she made a statement?
No, she didn't remember whether there were shorts in the dressing room. She just remember that if she made a statement, she essentially says what she would typically do was go into the dressing room and then radio up to the person in the loss prevention room. And that's what she typically does. But in this situation, she really didn't remember what happened when she went into the dressing room.
Does she remember going in the dressing room?
She does remember that, but she doesn't remember...
Don't we have a video of her going into the dressing room?
We do. She does remember that, but she doesn't remember what happened, essentially what she saw in the dressing room, and whether she saw shorts or not, and so whether she radioed up or not to the other loss prevention officer.
Does the video give us a timeline that helps fill in some of the gaps?
There is a timestamp on the video that I guess you can count down the minutes from of when things happen. But we don't know if she made the communication in the dressing room after or when she made this statement to the other officer. I know, citing the case law, there's no per se rule as to how much time passes. Is the president's impression?
In this case, it would have to have been sometime before your client was confronted by
Correct.
The security officer.
Correct. And I know some of the cases cited, there was the Hawkins case, which was cited in a state's brief, in which there was essentially a 911 call, that there was a disturbance in a neighbor's apartment. 7 minutes later, the wife from that apartment calls and says, my husband assaulted me. And the 8th Circuit in that case said that was present sense impression. I think one thing to note from that case is the court noted when in the 911 call, which was recorded, the wife says, my husband just assaulted me, showing that there was a close temporal relationship between the event and the statement. And I think the case law seemed to indicate that there's kind of a continuous sequence from the event to the statement in a lot of these cases. And I think in this case, we don't know, did Ms. Crum talk to somebody else after she left the dressing room, to another employee? And I think that kind of, whether there was an intervening event or not, kind of breaks that continuous sequence and could cause the statement, or I guess the unreliability of the statement that hearsay rule is trying to prevent.
Doesn't the timestamp on the video place sort of the outside limits of the length of time?
Yes. Yeah.
And how long are we talking about?
I think approximately a little over 3 minutes would be the from leaving the dressing room to being confronted outside would be the time frame. And again,
does that strengthen or weaken the reliability?
Well, we don't know whether it happened, the communication happened near the end of those 3 minutes or at the beginning. And also, as I mentioned earlier, because we don't know this, we don't know what Ms. Crum did after as I said, did she talk to somebody else? Did she look somewhere else? Did she turn her attention elsewhere? And all of those things could potentially break. Those intervening events could potentially break.
So the legislature has passed this exception to hearsay, and part of it appears to be you've got to make some kind of a statement pretty quickly.
Correct.
So you're telling us that apparently in this case we're talking about 3 minutes. What would be your rule? How quickly would the statement have to be made?
And I know I'm out of time, Judge.
You may answer.
Well, as the case law from the Eighth Circuit that was cited, there's no per se rule, but I think obviously the farther away you get from the event weakens the applying under the exception, as well if there's anything else that happens in between, unrelated or it happens in between the statement and the event.
Well, let me interrupt though, because it seems like you are acknowledging in cases like Manfire or whatever, I pronounce it from the Eighth Circuit, there's a temporal requirement. But yes. Is your proposition there could be an intervening event?
Well, in that case, the court actually does cite that there was potentially, that it cites a temporal relationship, but it also says that in that case, there was a deceased person that had a conversation with the defendant, and then would have driven or walked to the witnesses to meet the witness later. And the court specifically says, well, there's 3 to 4 hours potentially that to work with from the statement to the to him talking to this other individual. We don't know exactly when the statement was made, but we do know that he at least drove or walked to the other individual, the witness, to talk with him. And that kind of seems to be, kind of a, what I would say, breaking the chain of event and then statement after that.
Thank you.
If there's no further questions, I know I'm out of time. We'd ask the court reverse the conviction and remand for further proceedings. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Tangeman, good morning again.
May it please the court, I'm Erin Tangeman, Assistant Attorney General representing the state of Nebraska. There are two assignment of errors before this court today, and I intend to address only the first one, the hearsay issue. I will begin with exactly what the statement in question is, and I think the confusion here comes from how the loss prevention officer was questioned during his testimony. He was not asked, what did she say, and then we have a direct quote. Instead, I don't have the Bill of Exceptions in front of me, but what I remember, it was more of a leading line of questions. Did she call you after she entered the fitting room? Did she find the shorts? There were no shorts in the fitting room. So I do think there was a statement that there were no shorts in the fitting room, but it's not as clean as it could have been if he would have been simply asked, what did she say? But the implication is that she told him there were no shorts in the fitting room. And I would also point out that I do believe that the prosecutor believed that this statement was presented for the truth of the matter asserted. It is the position that the prosecution took at the appeal to the district court that this was admissible hearsay under the present sense impression. So I do think the prosecutor wanted the statement to go to the fact that there were no shorts in the fitting room after she left. Regarding what is a present sense impression, two things must be true. First, the statement must describe or explain an event or condition. Here, our condition would be the state of the fitting room after the appellant left. And then second, we have a timing component. The statement must have been made while or immediately after the declarant perceived the event or condition. My understanding is that the appellant's main contention is that the state did not prove that the timing element had been satisfied here, but the state disagrees. We believe that both the testimony adduced at trial along with the surveillance video establishes that the statement was made immediately after she viewed the fitting room and saw that there were no shorts in there. She did testify that she was contacted by the loss prevention officer, that he was concerned of a possible theft, and that she was asked to follow up on a customer. And he testified that his initial communication with her was while the appellant was in the fitting room. Although she does not remember exactly what she saw in the fitting room, because she is a manager at the store, she does do this a lot, he testified that he saw her go inside the fitting room, and then the communication happened where she told him there were no shorts in the fitting room. And we know that this communication occurred immediately after she observed the empty fitting room, and we know this because of two things. She testified that in these type of cases, she would immediately check the fitting room and then report to loss prevention what was or not there. And that finally, the video surveillance confirms that she immediately reported her findings because Tyler had time to exit his loss prevention office, exit the building, and confront the appellant in the parking lot. The state has nothing further to add on the hearsay issue, and I do not intend to address sufficiency of the evidence unless this court would have any questions.
How immediate does immediate have to be?
It's going to depend on a case-by-case basis. There's no per se rule when you look at the federal cases addressing this hearsay exception. Immediately after, shortly thereafter, I think there's no question that that's what happened here. We cited some cases in our brief where some courts have found 7 minutes, 16 minutes, but it's going to depend on a case-by-case. I don't think you can set a bright-line rule.
What does it depend upon?
Well, if you think of a circumstance where someone witnessed a car accident, but they didn't have a phone nearby and they had to walk to get a phone or something along that, I think it's just going to depend what happened between when they viewed this event and when they were able to make the statement. Because the reason this exception is allowed is because the reliability of the event and the statement occurring either at or near the same time, that there's not time for the person to either forget what happened or deliberately lie about what happened. So it is going to have to be pretty short in time, but I don't know that you can pick a number. It's going to have to just depend on each case.
Have you found any case where it was 3 minutes or less that it was excluded?
No, I don't think so.
All right.
How is this different than excited utterance?
Excited utterance doesn't have to be as short of time, I don't believe, and also there has to be some startling event where that's not always going to be the case with a present sense impression. I mean, that was clearly not the case here. They were just observing what they saw.
Is federal case law the best place for us to look to find cases in this area?
Yes, the legislature adopted pretty much verbatim the federal 8031.
If what she saw or didn't see is a pretty simple, straightforward, you know, are the shorts there or mm-hmm. not, does that have relevance to the timing component or any other aspect of the analysis here? I mean, if the reason for the exception is we don't have concerns about reliability.
Right.
I mean, she's not describing some know, elaborate car accident here, or there's a lot to see. It's just, did she see it?
Right. I mean, it's a much more simple case here, but I still think a lot of times you see this in federal cases with 911 calls where they're describing exactly what they saw. So my understanding is that the main reason, the main thing that has to be true is that the statement has to relate to that event. So whether it's a complicated event or a simple event, I don't know that that necessarily matters. But here we did have a very simple event followed by communication that happened shortly thereafter. Unless this court has any further questions, we would ask that you affirm the judgment of the district court.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. Counsel, you are both excused, and the court will go on to the next case of the day, which is State versus Corbin.